Listening to Crime Coffee and Crafts, a podcast featuring two crafty besties who love true crime and a good cup of joe.
Hello.
Good morning.
Whoa, that was a little bit robotic. That was awesome. I hope that comes through on the recording like that.
Probably. Remember, I am a bit robotic and alien at times, so.
I mean, it's fine. It's one of the reasons we all love you. I should probably, do I need to move my mic closer? Probably. Just maybe. Just a little for my episode. And then, yeah. All right.
Yeah.
Nice mug. Yes.
Thank you.
Dude, that mug is literally,
it's a lifesaver because it's so giant.
It's so giant that, like, this is the equivalent of like 2-ish cups.
Yeah.
That's the equivalent of like 4.
I drink a lot of coffee.
My mom actually sent me an article. I shared it in our Instagram stories.
Yeah.
About coffee intake.
Uh huh.
And it was like, how much coffee you should be drinking for 2022. And it's 4 cups of coffee is apparently the magic number. So I'm like, cool. She sent it to me. I was like,
well, a day?
I'm like right on schedule because that's about how much I drink.
Is that a day?
Yeah, per day.
Huh. Well, on recording days, I drink like twice as much.
Ooh. That's serious. Oh, my eye is watering.
Because to be honest, because I already had one. Oh, sorry, microphone.
I already had one full one.
Well, I've been up since 6.
Right. So yeah. I woke up and like checked my watch and it was like 7. I was like, cool, I'll lay here for a while. And then all of a sudden,
I mean, you were much more prepared than I was.
And it was like 8. And I was like, oh no. So. But it's fine.
We're here.
All right. So my coffee for today.
Yes. What is a
very, very special coffee sent to me by my mother bird. Hi, Mom. Thank you, Mom.
Hi, Mamason.
This shit's delicious. It's from Puerto Rico.
Puerto Rico.
This is from Cafe Calao. Nice. Highly recommend. Anybody wants to see it, go look at the video. I'll post a picture on Instagram also. It's good. It's strong.
Yeah.
It's got a really good flavor. I don't know what say on here what it's. Yeah, it doesn't really say. It's a medium roast. I know that. Yeah, that's about it. That's all I got. It's really good.
Nice.
And it smells delicious. I'm saving the other one she sent me for the next recording day.
Nice. We got to spread it out.
Got to spread them out a little bit. But yeah, it's really, really, really good.
Nice.
They go there every time they're in Puerto Rico. My craft for today, I already shared it on Instagram, but I'll take a picture once I block it, is this new scarf.
Super pretty. I love the yarn.
Very pink, which is totally not my norm, but like.
Yeah, true.
But I'm trying to give in.
I'm trying to give in to color. I've been doing more color in my life. I'm just
trying to give in to the feminine.
I know, that's hard. It's really hard.
It's really hard because like, I mean, you knew me as a teenager. I wore fucking baggy pants, baggy shorts. Tank tops. I mean, like
tiny tank tops and huge jeans. That was the thing.
That's what we wore.
Yeah. I miss it.
Red lipstick and lots of mascara.
She did, not me.
Yeah.
I didn't wear makeup.
But yeah, it's got sparkles on it.
I know.
It's so it's like
fairy.
Yeah, it's like
rose ring gold. In there. Yeah. My
whole idea was rose gold.
Nice.
But like a different take on it. And I did like these cool little tassel thingies just randomly hanging off. So once it's done, it'll wrap just once like this, and it'll have a little
button,
like a safety pin, a big,
okay,
like one of those giant brass
safety pins. Oh, nice.
Yeah. I really, really love it. And I have a matching hat, of course, but I didn't bring it up.
Yes. I liked, you put a little hashtag in your post on the hat. I don't think people realize what you said.
Oh, I have no idea what I said. I don't even know. What did I say?
I'm pretty sure.
Let me look. Oh, that's because for the Women's March.
Right.
The pussy hats.
Yes.
I
was like, clever, ma'am.
But very clever. That's what they're called, the pink hats. So, yes. I am planning to make lots of pink hats because I have a skill.
Yes, wow. You do.
I'm starting to sound like the dad from Taken. Okay. I have a special skill.
I have a special skill set.
Alrighty. All right. Are we ready?
Yeah, I am. I'm excited.
I hope I wrote it okay. We were just talking about like the ADD issues.
Right.
I constantly feel like my stories were like bleh, all over the place, but
they always come together nicely.
Yeah.
You're just hard on yourself.
I am. So, trigger warnings for this episode, kidnapping, rape, torture, and murder. This guy was a real piece. And some of the areas hit way close to home because I used to live in LA and specifically lived in these areas. And the San Francisco areas were really close to home too.
Yeah.
So I'm covering Rodney Alcala, AKA, they do call him the dating game killer, but I'm not going to call him that because it gives a weird connotation that he killed somebody from dating game and he did not. So.
Yeah. He just appeared on the show.
Exactly. He was on it once and that was that.
What's his face? Is it Gary Ridgway? The Golden Gate killer.
Golden State?
No. You know what I'm talking about? They portrayed him as a cop.
Right. Yeah, that was
when the Golden really State. He didn't murder while he was a cop.
Right.
And he
was barely a cop. He was barely a cop for like
this much time. 3 or 4 years, I think.
I don't even
know. He actually did 30 years as a mechanic. Like that's what he retired as.
Yeah.
So it's just sometimes people like to give little
snippets
and it's not good. Real.
It's not good to give serial killers a name anyway, because it gives them the fame that they want.
Sure, the notoriety. But sometimes I really dig the nicknames because they're creative. Well,
if they're like a good one, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Like the Son of Sam. I mean,
yeah.
Which I'll hit on a little bit in this one, actually.
Oh, funny. So we digressed. We're back on track.
Digressed big time.
Back on track.
All right. So Rodney Alcala was born Rodrigo Jacques Alcala Bucur. That's a hell of a name.
That is a fancy name.
On August 23rd, 1943, in San Antonio, Texas, to a Mexican-American couple, Raul Alcala Bucur and Ana Maria Gutierrez. In 1951, Alcala's dad moved the family to Mexico, but he abandoned them just 3 years later. So in 1954, his mom moved him and his two sisters to LA, like a suburban area in LA.
Mm-hmm.
And at this point, he was 11 years old. So that's a big change, I'm sure.
Big change, abandoned by father.
A lot of bad changes. So now we're going to go 1961. Alcala was 17 now, and he decided to join the army where he served as a clerk. And that's, it's, I'm going to kind of go through the timeline.
Yeah.
Fast forward a bit to 1964, Alcala had what was described as a nervous breakdown, during which he went AWOL and hitchhiked from Fort Bragg to his mother's house.
And so from North Carolina to California, he hitchhiked.
Right. So a little side note here, I did see somewhere, and I can't recall where, that his father had died shortly before this nervous breakdown. AWOL.
Okay.
So, but like, he wasn't in contact with his father as far as I know. So
yeah,
I don't know.
I don't know why that would trigger.
Well, it could something. Because it can trigger. Because
he never has closure with the dad. Like, the dad abandoned him, and then he could never have closure because he died.
So after that, he was diagnosed by a military psychiatrist with antisocial personality disorder, and subsequently was discharged on medical grounds. So. After leaving the army, Alcala attended the UCLA School of Fine Arts to study his passion for photography.
Oh my.
Yeah. And that definitely plays into his entire story.
Gotcha.
Alcala committed his first known crime on September 25th, 1969. The summer of love happened. That was the year of love. Unfortunately, he was not a lovely person. It was in Hollywood. So
Hollyweird.
Yeah, Hollyweird. Just throwing it out there, this is pretty fucked up. So if you are sensitive about children being attacked, maybe don't listen. All right. 8-year-old Tali Shapiro was walking herself to school. She left extra early because she hated taking the bus, even though her parents specifically told her not to walk. But her parents were asleep, and she really just didn't want to take the bus. So, now just for like a little clarification, she lived at the Chateau Marmont.
Okay.
Which, because her parents, I guess, were in the industry. So, you know, it's a fun place to live, I guess.
Yeah.
But... just so people have an idea of where she's at. Okay. Unfortunately, on this day, Alcala was out driving around when he spotted Tali. He lured her into his car, saying he would give her a ride to school. And Tali knew she shouldn't, but he assured her that he knew her parents and it would be fine. Yeah.
Ugh.
Yeah. That was a lie, obviously.
Obvi.
Sadly, she got in his car and immediately regretted this decision. Wow, words are hard today. What Alcala didn't know was that someone had seen him luring 8-year-old Tali and followed the car to a new address only a few miles away.
Mm.
Thank fucking God for that person, because that person found out where he took her, found a payphone, called the cops. And when the police arrived, they looked through a window of the apartment and saw a naked girl lying in a pool of blood. And she had a steel bar across her neck. Tali was barely alive, having been raped and beaten with the steel bar. But Alcala had fled out of a back door or window. Not really sure. And the police were giving chase, but they had to make that tough decision because they realized she was still alive. Do we go after him and let her die, or do we stay and help her?
Well, they could have split up.
I don't think there were that many. I think it was literally like a cop.
Two people?
Like maybe one... two cops. Yeah.
Mm.
It was the first people on scene. So they helped her, thankfully. And Tali was in a coma for about a month, but she survived, and she actually... live I'm pretty sure she's still alive today. So
good on her.
Yeah.
She was a fighter, clearly.
Oh, hell yeah. Alcala had also left behind some photography equipment in the apartment because, well, he was on a little bit in a hurry. So upon further investigation of this equipment, investigators found evidence that the man living there was a sexual predator. He had tons of photos of children and young women in vulnerable positions. And
was this Alcala's apartment?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So at first, I thought it was just some random apartment.
No. He took her to his own apartment.
Well, that's dumb. You can't
right?
get caught.
Yeah, he's an idiot. But
fleeing from your own home makes no sense.
Yeah, exactly. So after finding Tali Shapiro and all of the evidence in the apartment, the FBI found out who lived in the apartment. And in 1969, Rodney Alcala became one of the top 10 FBI fugitives, and his photo was posted everywhere across the country. Hallelujah. But the story goes on.
Something goes hinky.
I think a lot of things went hinky in this one.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's kind of that time period too.
That time period was rough.
Yeah.
Like, yeah.
Yeah. I'm like,
went from peace, love, and happiness to
there were so many serial killers.
And rapists. And
yeah.
Yeah. We do definitely talk about a lot of rough people from that area.
A lot of other podcasts don't like to cover these stories.
And these are ones, like, we do talk about ones that aren't really talked about.
But, like, yeah, I'm going to talk about the kids because that stuff needs to be talked about. I know it sucks, but it's like, I'm going to talk about
it. We can't live in denial.
No.
Bad things happen to everybody.
Exactly.
Got to see the signs.
Yeah.
Red flags.
So, in early 1971, Alcala briefly studied film using the name John Berger, which is, I know. Okay, but this is a different spelling.
It's the B-E-R-G-E-R.
This time, yes.
Mm-hmm.
At New York University with none other than Roman Polanski.
Oh.
Who, it turns out, was also a rapist and a pedophile.
Yes.
But nobody knew it until later. And isn't he still on the run, technically? He's never been extradited.
Because that's something to look into.
He went to a country, I'm pretty sure, where he couldn't be extradited.
So he could be doing messed up things there.
Right. Oh, yeah. In June...
Once a monster, always a monster.
Yeah. Well, for sure. In June of 1971, so we're in the same year, Cornelia Michelle Crilly, a 23-year-old TWA flight attendant, was found raped and strangled in her Manhattan apartment. Cornelia had just moved into this new apartment. Her boyfriend, Leon, said he had been moving, said she had been moving all day. He was living with her temporarily while she was moving. So Leon went to work that day, came home, and Cornelia's door was locked and nobody would answer the phone. I guess he had like tried calling from a payphone.
Mm-hmm.
So the police got involved because he could not get a hold of her. And when they went in, they found her naked, bound, and gagged with a bite mark on her breast, and she had been strangled with a nylon stocking.
Okay.
So Cornelia's murder remained unsolved until 2011.
Wow.
Yeah. Unfortunately, there were around 2,000 killings in New York in 1971, so the police were pretty tapped out, and the case went cold. Plus, science was not even close.
Yeah, we talk about that all the time, like
it's
DNA
wild.
And everything. We have come long, long way.
But you know what's cool? What I always find really fascinating is that they collected. They knew enough to collect the evidence.
Right.
They knew that eventually it would get there, so they collected mm-hmm. that DNA. They collected the swabs. They took all that stuff. And I just think that's fascinating.
It's good because now we can solve these cold cases.
Oh, and a lot of them have been getting solved recently. It's very exciting.
That's very true.
So after Cornelia's murder, Alcala moved and got a job as a counselor at an all-girls New Hampshire arts camp.
Oh. Using That's a, just great.
Yep. Using a slightly different alias. John Berger with a U.
Oh.
Yes. Thankfully, a couple of the young girls.
Sorry.
I know. Thankfully, a couple of the young girls who attended this camp were very observant, and they recognized the man in an FBI most wanted photo in a local post office as their camp counselor.
Oh.
Yeah. Can you imagine? You're at the post office and you look over and see FBI most wanted poster on the wall. And it's literally
your camp counselor.
Your camp counselor, and he's wanted for rape and murder.
That's how horror movies start out.
150%. Yikes. So the girls, thankfully, alerted either their dean or their parents, depending on where you look, who then called the cops. Alcala was arrested and transported to California. Sadly, they had to cut a deal with Alcala because Tally's family had relocated out of the country and they didn't want to put their daughter through any more trauma, which I totally get.
I get it too. It's just, oh.
It sucks, but also she was 8 years old.
Yeah.
When that happened, and like, she's not much older now, like right. when this is happening. So like, I wouldn't want to put her through it either unless she wanted to. I would leave it up to her. For sure.
Yeah.
Oh no, where'd it go? There it is. Okay. So Alcala was sentenced to 1 year to life.
What kind of sentence is that?
That's what I'm wondering. But he only served 34 months. He apparently charmed his way out of prison. He charmed his psychiatrist
into thinking
he had been rehabilitated, because during that time, they actually thought they could rehabilitate sex offenders.
Right.
So part of his parole agreement was that he had to register as a sex offender. Not that that really did anything, because nobody did background checks. 1974. We'll skip. Less than 2 months after Alcala was released on parole, he was arrested for assaulting a 13-year-old girl named Julie, who was waiting for the bus. Alcala picked her up after she accepted a ride to school.
In a white van?
No.
Sorry.
I think the white vans came later.
Right. Candy?
Oh, God. Ew. So I've had people pull up beside me and ask me, do you want any candy, little girl?
You can lure me with books and tacos, but that's not it.
Want some coffee, little girl? That'll work. Gosh.
Ugh. So the girl was picked up.
Yeah. And offered but when, a ride. When he passed her school, Julie got nervous, but she was already in his car. So it was kind of too late. Alcala took Julie.
Jumping out that bitch.
I know, right? Alcala took Julie to a secluded beach and offered her some weed. A park ranger happened to be patrolling the area and smelled the weed. So, sorry, I'm laughing. It's funny. So the ranger investigated the smell and found Julie. So like nothing happened to her. Thank freaking God.
She was just there.
Like she was just there. And he was arrested again, but then he was again paroled. After right. serving only 2 years.
Because he didn't technically do anything.
All he did, he got arrested for giving weed to a minor. That's it.
Well, luckily that park ranger found him before he did anything else.
Well, and like now, California state law, thankfully.
Well, yeah. I mean,
the three strikes law? No, I'm just saying in general.
Oh, the three
strikes law. He should have been put away.
Yeah.
Period. Throw away the fucking key. Because back then it was not legal. It was probably just a misdemeanor or something stupid.
Yeah.
So in 1977, Alcala's parole officer actually let a repeat offender go visit family in New York. Quotations around visit family.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. NYPD cold case investigators believe Alcala murdered 23-year-old Jane Hover about a week after he arrived in New York. Jane was the daughter of the owner of a nightclub in Hollywood called Ciro's. And she was the goddaughter of Dean Martin and Sammy Davis Jr.
Oh.
Her remains were found buried on the Rockefeller estate.
Mm-mm. Mm-hmm. Damn.
Yep. But nobody was tied to it for many, many years. So now we're in 1978, and Alcala has a new job as a typesetter for the LA Times. Apparently, literally nobody did background checks back then. During this time, he was also publishing his, or not publishing, wow. Pushing, wrong word. Pushing his photography business on young men and women with the ruse that he was a professional fashion photographer and was building up his portfolio.
Yeah.
Yep.
People see the lights. They
want to be famous.
They want to.
And everybody moves to LA to be famous, except me.
Everyone.
That's not my intention.
I never moved to LA. Never.
It's fun when you're young, but like, I would never want to live there again. Mm-mm. No thanks. He was also interviewed during this time by the Hillside Strangler Task Force as part of their known sex offender investigation. Alcala was ruled out as the Hillside Strangler, but he did get picked up on a weed possession charge. One of his One of his coworkers said that Alcala shared his photos with his coworkers, which his coworker thought was pretty odd, especially because when he asked Alcala why he had taken the photos, Alcala said their moms had asked him to, which was extra odd because all of the girls and boys were naked and in sexual positions.
Right. So he was doing child pornography and distributing it.
Yes. Yes. To people who didn't want to see it.
Who didn't want to see it.
Like, what? Okay, so we're still in 1978.
Mm-hmm.
Alcala was chosen as a contestant on the popular, at the time, game show called The Dating Game, which is how he got the Dating Game Killer name. The host introduced Alcala as a successful photographer. Got his start when his father found him in the darkroom at the age of 13. Fully developed.
Oh, that sounds so fucking creepy. Gross. What the hell? Dating Stonies go back and edit their stuff.
Yeah. And then he said, between takes, you might find him skydiving or motorcycling.
Oh, right.
And by the way,
who are the writers of this show?
Seriously, though, like, you guys can go and you can watch that episode. You can watch little clips of him. I got so, I was like gagging watching him because I was like, this guy is disgusting. Like, in hindsight, really fucking disgusting.
Yeah.
Anyway, one of the other contestants on the show has described Alcala as very strange and that he had bizarre opinions. And Alcala actually won the competition, which meant he won a date with the bachelorette, Cheryl Bradshaw, who ended up refusing to go out with him because he creeped her out so bad.
Something good on her, because she might have wound up dead.
She could have, yes.
And then could have really been the Dating Game Killer.
Yes. So she said straight up, like, something in her gut just didn't feel right.
Good for her.
So apparently, after Alcala was rejected by Cheryl, he went on to kill 3 more women in a short time period. Apparently, he just couldn't handle the rejection.
The rejection, yeah.
Mm-hmm. So now we're in February of 1979. Alcala picked up 15-year-old Monique Hoyt, who was hitchhiking. And Monique had not talked publicly about this until somebody was doing a documentary. Mm-hmm. About him, and it was really interesting getting to hear her story from her.
Right.
So she was hitchhiking. She was a rebellious runaway. She called herself that. It's not just me.
Mm-hmm.
he had told her that he was a photographer and wanted to take pictures of her up on the mountains and that he would pay her.
Mm.
So she went with him. And as he was taking her last photo, he told her to pull her shirt up over her face for a funny picture.
Yeah, that's real funny.
Yeah. So Monique did it. And that's when Alcala attacked her with a branch. He hit her in the face with a big branch.
Mm.
She was screaming for help, but they were in the middle of the wilderness. And she said she passed out for a little bit. But when she woke up, he was raping her and she pretended to still be unconscious. After Alcala was done, she assured him it was okay and played to his emotions. This girl was smart.
Well, she had to be a little street smart.
Well, yeah.
She wasn't so street smart that she didn't go with him, but to survive, she was at least a little
smart. As they drove back to the city, Alcala was asking her if she forgave him, to which she replied, yes, everything's fine. But when Alcala stopped at a gas station, Monique took her chance and hit the pavement and she took off. She found help and Alcala was arrested again quickly. And unfortunately, his mother posted bail for him and they set him loose. When somebody is this violent of an offender repeatedly,
please don't enable them and don't get them out of jail.
Well, and don't give him bail. Yeah. Lock him up and don't even give him bail. Don't give him an option.
Yeah.
Ugh. Gross.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So we were in 1979. We're still in 1979. Just fast forward a little bit. June 20th. There were a few 12-year-old girls in Huntington Beach just hanging out together, enjoying the day on the beach. Some random guy, Alcala, with a camera came up to them and asked if he could photograph them. Alcala was this random guy, which I already said. He gave them some bullshit about being a fashion photographer, and so they let him take their photos. Thankfully, a woman thought this was odd and said something to him. And Alcala just walked away without saying anything.
Good.
But after a bit, one of the girls realized it was time to go to her ballet class. So she hopped on her bike and started riding away. And this little girl's name was Robin Samso. She was never seen alive again. Robin's decomposing body was found 12 days later in the foothills of Los Angeles. Thankfully, they had some witnesses from the day when Robin went missing, and detectives quickly put together a sketch of the photographer because he had been going up to lots of random young people that day. And so there were a lot of witnesses. They put the sketch out to law enforcement agencies, and a parole officer recognized the sketch as his own parolee.
Right, because he's been in and out.
So police searched Alcala's mom's house in Monterey Park. And while searching there, they found a receipt for a storage locker in Seattle.
Interesting.
Yeah. Upon searching the locker, they found a pouch looking thing with like jewelry in it. And there was a set of earrings that was confirmed by Robin's mom. And I'm pretty sure now by DNA to be Robin's.
Right, so he was taking souvenirs.
Yeah. So Alcala was arrested in July of 1979 and held without bail. Fucking finally.
Yeah.
In 1980, he was tried, convicted, and sentenced to death for Robin's murder. But the verdict was overturned by the California Supreme Court because jurors had been improperly informed of his prior sex crimes. They're not supposed to be informed of that, apparently.
That's stupid. It shows motive. It shows his lack of...
Well, and he's getting worse.
Yeah.
Well.
It shows a progression.
And they don't know his history either. Yeah. His real history of, like, he's been murdering women for how long? So. So in 1986, after a second trial basically identical to the first, except for the omission of the prior criminal record testimony, Alcala was again convicted and sentenced to death and sent back to San Quentin, sitting on death row.
Okay.
However,
A Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals panel nullified the second conviction.
That damn Ninth Circuit.
Words are hard.
Ooh.
There was a park ranger who had witnessed a man leading a little girl in the area that they later found Robin's body, and the park ranger didn't do anything.
Oh, no.
The park ranger had apparently carried the guilt with them and wasn't a capable witness anymore.
Right.
For the second trial. So, like, yeah.
So part of their conclusive evidence was...
Yep.
Yeah.
So while preparing their third prosecution in 2003, Orange County, California investigators learned that Alcala's DNA, which, thank you to the new law back then, which Alcala had to give by these new laws, he had no choice, matched DNA in some cold cases, and this led to Alcala's indictment. Wow.
It's how it's spelled.
Wow.
Indictment.
Indictment. Scheiße. For the murders of four more women. Four. DNA. Conclusive. What? So Jill Barcombe was 18. She was a runaway from New York. She was found rolled up like a ball in a ravine in LA in 1977. Jill was originally thought to have been a victim of the Hillside Strangler, as she had been strangled with her own pant leg and her skull was crushed. Gnarly. Georgia Wickstead, 27, was tortured, raped, and bludgeoned to death in her Malibu apartment in 1977. Wow. Alcala left a palm print and DNA at this crime scene. That's nice. I mean, he really was not thinking ahead.
Not a lot of them did understand
that
they were leaving evidence behind.
Right. Charlotte Lamb, 31, was raped, strangled with a shoelace, and left in the laundry room of an El Segundo apartment complex in 1978. Her earring was also found in Alcala's belongings. This was confirmed to be hers because it still had a tiny bit of residue with her DNA on it.
Mm.
Jill Parento, 21. Parento. That's how it's spelled. 21. She was killed in her Burbank apartment in 1979. That's all I have on her. But in 2003, prosecutors entered a motion to join the SAMHSA charges with those of the four newly discovered victims. Alcala's attorneys contested it.
Of course.
Of course they did. But in 2006, the California Supreme Court ruled in the prosecution's favor. And in February of 2010, Alcala stood trial on the five joint charges. For the third trial, Alcala...
It took forever.
Yeah. Alcala elected to act as his own attorney. Just FYI, people.
That's we all know how that goes well.
Never a good idea. Well
you make yourself look crazier.
Not even kidding. Dude would like get up on the like up in the freaking stand there and like talk in one voice, and then he would come down and talk in a deeper voice, asking himself questions.
Yeah.
At his crazy trial.
I wonder if he was trying to go for insanity.
Dude, probably. Probably. I just think he was narcissistic and thought he was smarter than everybody else.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah, not so much.
However, after less than 2 days deliberation, the jury convicted him on all five counts of first degree murder. And a surprise witness during the penalty phase of the trial, Tally Shapiro.
No.
Alcala's first known victim. And he was sentenced to death for a third time.
Did that get overturned? I really hope not.
Fuck no. March 2010, police departments in Huntington Beach, California, and New York City released 120 of Alcala's photographs, asking for the public's help in identifying them in the hope of determining if any of the women and children he photographed were additional victims. There were 900 additional photos that couldn't be made public.
Yeah.
they were too sexually explicit.
That's a lot like Lonnie Franklin.
Yeah.
Remember they had like thousands of photos. They could only put out like 100 because.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. And same with the.
Which is sad because.
The money passer guy.
Yeah, that too.
Yikes. But in the first few weeks, police reported that approximately 21 women had come forward to identify themselves. So,
yeah. Well, that's good.
But
it could be taken off the list, but still.
Well, it's important to take them off the list. So police know, like, hey, we don't need to look for
them. Alive. Yeah.
At least six families said they believed they recognized loved ones who had disappeared and were never found. Mm. I guarantee his body count is higher.
Oh, I'm sure. I'm sure. Guaranteed. With all the, yeah.
Yeah. 2013, a family member recognized the photo of Christine Thornton, 28, whose body was found in Wyoming in 1982. Hmm. And, yeah. As of July 2021, 110 of the original photos remain posted online, and police continue to solicit the public's help with further identifications. So, to you listeners out there,
please go check them out.
Whether it's somebody who's missing in your life or not, you all know somebody who was alive in that time period. Yeah. Doesn't matter where they lived. Look at the photos and see if you recognize anybody as maybe a living person, because mm-hmm. getting them off the list is important.
Yep.
So that the police can focus their resources elsewhere.
Correct. All right. Do it.
So now, New York State. After Alcala's 2010 conviction, New York authorities announced that they would no longer pursue Alcala because of his status as a convict awaiting execution.
Mm-hmm.
But in January of 2011, a Manhattan grand jury indicted him for the murders of Cornelia Crilly, the TWA flight attendant, and Ellen Hover, the Ciro's heiress.
Okay, then.
In June of 2012, he was extradited to New York, where he initially entered not guilty pleas on both counts. In December of 2012, he changed both of those to guilty. And on January 7th of 2013, a Manhattan judge sentenced Alcala to another 25 years to life.
Nice.
Yeah. Washington, Seattle.
Mm-hmm.
In 2010, Seattle police named Alcala as a person of interest in the unsolved murders of Antoinette Whitaker, 13. She died in July of 1977.
Mm-hmm.
And Joyce Gaunt, 17. Died in February of 1978.
Hmm.
San Francisco, in March of 2011, investigators in Marin County, California, where I used to freaking live, just north of San Francisco, announced that they were confident that Alcala was responsible for the 1977 murder of 19-year-old Pamela Jean Lamson, who disappeared after making a trip to Fisherman's Wharf to meet a man who had offered to photograph her. Her battered, naked body was found in Marin County near a hiking trail. With no fingerprints or usable DNA, though, charges were never filed. But police claimed that there was sufficient evidence to convince them that Alcala had committed the crime.
So there could be closure.
Maybe someday.
Yeah.
So now we're in Wyoming.
Okay.
In September of 2016... Alcala was charged with the murder of 28-year-old Christine Ruth Thornton, the girl who disappeared in 1977.
Mm-hmm.
In 2013, a relative recognized her as the subject of one of Alcala's photos.
Okay.
They called her Ruth, I guess. Ruth's body was found in Wyoming in 1982, but was not identified until 2015 when DNA from her relatives matched tissue samples from her remains.
Mm-hmm.
Alcala admitted taking the photo, but not to killing the woman, who, by the way, was about 6 months pregnant. Thornton is the first alleged murder victim linked to Alcala's photos made public in 2010.
The 73-year-old Alcala was reportedly too ill to make the journey from California to Wyoming to stand trial on new charges.
Too ill?
Too ill.
Please.
I mean,
he was ill.
He died this
very
year.
Very sick.
Or he died last year in July.
2021, yeah.
Yeah. So that's that. But other diagnoses later proposed by various psychiatric experts at his trials included narcissistic personality disorder, borderline personality disorder, and malignant narcissism with psychopathy and sexual sadism comorbidities.
Mm-hmm.
That's a fucking mouthful.
Yeah.
So during Alcala's incarceration between the second and third trials, he actually wrote and self-published a book.
Of course he did.
And it's called You, the Jury, in which he claimed innocence in the Samso case and suggested a different suspect.
What?
He also filed two lawsuits against the California penal system for a slip and fall incident and for refusing to provide him a low fat diet.
Oh my.
It sounds like that the QAnon shaman guy.
Yeah.
Who isn't he like organic and like vegan? Something like that.
Yeah.
Like, dude, sorry. Sorry about your luck.
Sorry. You're not gonna get your fancy diet.
So Alcala died of unspecified natural causes on July 24th, 2021, at the age of 77. And yeah, that's it. Go out and look for those photos. Do a simple search. They're posted on several different news sites. It's like a little time capsule. It's really sad.
Yeah.
But
yeah, do that. You got to make some identifications if possible. And then my biggest thing on all of these, because we just keep coming across it, and I know that they all started way back in the day when we had less knowledge of kidnappers and
right.
rapists and killers, but especially females and children, stay away from strangers.
Yeah.
I mean, it really is true. Like, even like adults use children to lure children away too.
It's true.
There's a lot of ways monsters can get you, and you've got to stay vigilant. And if you don't feel something's right,
it's not. Trust your gut always.
Trust the gut.
When you feel like I don't know about something, that's your gut telling you no, 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 this is wrong, so don't do it.
It's time to get the F out.
Yeah. GTFO.
Don't accept rides from nobody.
Yeah. So yeah, that's it. I got all my info from Wikipedia, Discovery Plus, and a lot of random news articles.
Yeah.
Throughout whenever. And you can find those pictures in a lot of places.
I'm sure we will post some.
Yeah.
I don't know if you'll post the victims, the photographs, but you will.
I might post a link if I can find a good link that has them all.
Yeah.
That
would be good.
I know there's a Facebook group that is dedicated to it. So if you can find that, that would be good too.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know that it's active anymore, but it's worth a try. So that's my case.
Brava.
That it? Got anything else?
I don't know. Do you?
No, I think I'm good.
Everybody, listen, rate, and review us.
Yes! But that's, you know.
I know. You've got your little...
And my little pre-recorded thing, I need to redo it. So y'all, if you haven't tried out Good Pods, go try out Good Pods.
It's really cool.
Good Pods is really neat because you can interact. And
with
you
other
can,
podcasters.
Like, well, and listeners.
Listeners,
yeah. Which is really cool. You can rate, review, and share on your own little profile. It's mm-hmm. like, it's kind of like they took Apple Podcast and like Instagram or something, and mm-hmm. or like Twitter, and mixed them together,
mushed them.
It's kind of like Twitter, yeah, a little bit.
Yeah, because you can make little comments.
Yeah, it's really cool
without review. Like, you do the reviews separate. Right. And then you can make little comments.
So yeah. If you're not on there, please go on there and find us and listen and rate and review, because it's awesome. And it's all indie podcasters. Oh, yes. And that's all I got. All right. Ta-ta!
Now.
Thanks for listening to Crime, Coffee, and Crafts. If you love our podcast, please rate and review us on Apple Podcasts. This helps us more than you know. If you really love us and want to support us, go to our website at www.crimecoffeeandcrafts.com. From there, you can join our Patreon, shop our merch, and find us on social media.